Luke 14. One Sabbath, when Jesus went to eat in the house of a prominent Pharisee, he was being carefully watched. There in front of him was a man suffering from abnormal swelling of the body. His body. Jesus asked the Pharisees and experts in the law, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not?" But they remained silent. So taking hold of the man, he healed him and sent him on his way. Then he asked them, "If one of you has a child or an ox that falls into a well on the Sabbath day, will you not immediately pull it out?" And they had nothing to say. When he noticed how the guests picked the places of honor at the table, he told them this parable. "When someone invites you to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor, for a person more distinguished than you may have been invited. If so, the host who invited both of you will come and say to you, 'Give this person your seat.' Then, humiliated, you will have to take the least important place. But when you're invited, take the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he will say to you, 'Friend, move up to a better place.' Then you will be honored in the presence of all the other guests. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted." Then Jesus said to his host, "When you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or sisters, your relatives, or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous." When one of those at the table with him heard this, he said to Jesus, "Blessed is the one who will eat at the feast in the kingdom of God." Jesus replied, "A certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited many guests. At the time of the banquet, he sent his servant to tell those who had been invited, 'Come, for everything is now ready.' But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said, 'I've just bought a field and I must go and see it. Please excuse me.' Another said, 'I have just bought 5 yoke of oxen and I'm on my way to try them out. Please excuse me.' Still another said, 'I've just got married, so I can't come.' The servant came back and reported this to his master. Then the owner of the house became angry and ordered his servant, 'Go out quickly into the streets and alleys of the town and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame.' 'Sir,' the servant said, 'what you ordered has been done, but there is still room.' Then the master told his servant, 'Go out to the roads and country lanes and compel them to come in, so that my house will be full. I tell you, not one of those who were invited will get a taste of my banquet.'" So reads God's word. I'm wondering this morning, what stops you becoming a Christian? If you're not a Christian, what's stopping you becoming a Christian? Is it because you think you're too bad? You think that Christianity is not for people like you, it's for good people, it's for nice people, it's for pleasant people, it's for posh people, it's for well-educated people, it's for people who have ordinary lives, have ordinary marriages, have ordinary relationships. I'm really too bad. I'm not so worried about being bad, but I just know I'm not the good sort of person that a Christian should be. But maybe the reason you don't become a Christian is because you actually think you're too good. And sometimes that can be because you think you're too morally good, like, "I don't need God because I'm really good." Or it could be just that you think, "I don't need God at all in my life because I don't really care whether I'm morally good or not. I have no need of help. I have no need of a savior. I have no need of rescue." Too good, too bad. But if you're a Christian here this morning, I'm wondering, why do you hesitate offering people a chance to know God? Why do you hesitate offering people the gospel? And there are all kinds of logistical reasons or emotional reasons or reasons to do with, you know, what friends you have or what friends you don't have or what circumstances you're in and all those kind of things. But I wonder sometimes if you just think the gospel's not that attractive. You know, sometimes you kind of organize something. There's some event you need to go to, and really it's a matter of duty. And sometimes you think maybe inviting people to come to Christ, to become Christians, is more like sort of asking someone to a bit of an awkward family party where you could try and sort of compel them to come. And you say, no, it'll be all right. It won't be too bad. You might like it when you get there. Is it that kind of feeling, asking people to become Christians? I think we sometimes feel that about Christian events. And, you know, let's be honest, sometimes Christian events are a bit creaky and all those kind of things. But sometimes we almost sort of apologetically invite people to Christian events because we kind of think, oh, we've got to somehow persuade them to come. And in our heart of hearts, we think, I don't know whether that's that interesting to them. This section really helps us address some of those kind of questions. Let's look first of all at this. Jesus shows mercy. See that in the first six verses of chapter 14? Jesus shows mercy, shows amazing mercy. Jesus is invited to the house of a prominent Pharisee. And when you first read that, you think, pretty good. He seems to be moving up in the world. He's been invited to the house of a Pharisee, and not just that, a prominent Pharisee. And it was a Sabbath day, we discover. And on the Sabbath day, they would have a meal that they'd prepared beforehand. Remember, they didn't want to prepare food on the Sabbath, so they got some kind of, you know, cold chicken or whatever it was. Probably not chicken, but anyway, whatever it was prepared the day before, they had it. It wasn't that positive, though, because it seems as though he was invited in a way so they could catch him out. You see that at the end of verse 1, kind of starts well, but the end of verse 1, he's going to the house of a prominent Pharisee. He was being carefully watched. He was being carefully watched. There were people watching to see what he would do. And then there's a man with edema, with swelling, who comes right in front of him. And you wonder at this prominent Pharisee's home, why did a man with swelling come right in front of Jesus? Why did that happen? And it could have been just a kind of an innocent moment that someone's allowed in and so forth, but more like it could have been that they allowed that to happen because, as you saw from chapter 13, they knew that Jesus was likely to heal, and they thought, let's just see what he does. Let's allow this man. You know, there were no bouncers who kind of stopped him. Let's allow this man to be in front of Jesus with his illness, with his swelling, and see just what Jesus does. He wouldn't have been invited to the meal. Nobody with that condition would have been. And Jesus puts out this question because he knows that they're trying to trap him, and he knows that they're not going to be happy if he heals him. So he asks, verse 3, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? Good question. Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? What would you say if you're a Pharisee? You've got all these laws, you've got all these rules. We thought about them a few weeks ago. And is healing work? Well, they would say that it is. And so they want to say, no, it's not lawful. But then there's loads of other people around as well, and there's this sick man. So they're kind of stuck. And you know what you do when you're stuck? You don't say anything. You know, if you want to say to your children, you do realize that actually, you know, smashing that thing, hitting your brother, sister was wrong, don't you? If you actually know and you don't know what to say, what do? You just sit there as a child, don't want to say anything. And that's what the Pharisees do, they don't say anything. So Jesus carries on and he heals him. See that verse 4? They remain silent, taking hold of the man. It's a real kind of sense of Jesus getting involved. It doesn't just touch him. And taking hold, it's quite a thing, isn't it? Taking hold of a man. And he heals him and sent him on his way. That word about sent him on his way is quite an interesting word. It's the same word that's used in chapter 13, verse 12, where Jesus says, it's just sort of back a page, Jesus says to a woman who he heals, woman, you are set free from your infirmity. And it's exactly the same word, set free, as sent on his way. I'm sure Luke's being intentional in that. There's someone else who's been set free. There's someone else who's been released. And the first thing we learn is that Jesus is so full of mercy, and Jesus wants to take hold of you, heal you, and set you free. whoever you are this morning, but particularly if you haven't yet understood and put your faith in Jesus, do you know what Jesus says to you? He says that he's willing and able to take hold of you, grab hold of you, get involved in your life. Whatever you've done, whoever you are, whatever you think at this moment, he's able to get hold of you, heal you from your sin, from your shame, from your illness, from your inability to please and to serve God and even to do what you want to do. He's willing to heal you and forgive you of that and to set you free. And all you need to do is a bit like this man, to stand in front of Jesus, to put yourself in front of Jesus and say, this is who I am. I don't love you. I don't serve you. I don't worship you like I should. I don't really know what my life is about. I live in a body that's showing the signs, the marks of sin because I am aging and dying. I live in a world that is broken and fractured and failing and falling apart. This is who I am, Lord Jesus. And do you know what Jesus says to you? I'm going to grab hold of you. I'm going to heal you. I'm going to send you on your way. You're going to be free. You're going to live a full life. You're going to know me. You're going to know God the Father as your Father and friend, and you're going to be on your way to eternal life. Jesus shows that's mercy. He shows it to you. Do you want to stand in front of Jesus this morning and just say that? Jesus is so full of mercy, and he sets us free. See what Jesus then goes on to do? He talks again about the breaking of the Sabbath. Verse 5, he says, if anyone has a child or an ox that falls in a well on the Sabbath day, will you not immediately pull it out? And he's making a general point about caring for animals on the Sabbath. In chapter 13, verse 15, he says something similar about feeding animals on the Sabbath. And he's trying to make the point that I'm not trying to break the law of the Sabbath, but always things that you had to do on the Sabbath or works of mercy, your animal that's fallen in a pit, always those were good things to do on the Sabbath. So this had nothing to do with the Sabbath law. This has everything to do with your petty laws. That's what Jesus is saying and making this point about the animals. He's exposing their hypocrisy. He's saying you care for more for your traditions, your rules. You care more for them than you do for this person. Here's somebody in front of me, like this wounded ox who's fallen into a pit, an animal who's fallen into a pit. Here's an animal falling in a pit, this poor man with a swelling, with the edema, and he's right in front of you, and you don't care. You don't care at all. You just care about your rules. There's your rules up here. There's the man down here. And it's just like, it's like you treat your animals better than you're treating this guy. And of course, we can sit there, stand here, and say, oh yeah, those Pharisees, rotten bunch, weren't they? I'm so glad I'm not a Pharisee. Lord, thank you, I'm not a Pharisee. And then we think, as we were thinking just a few weeks ago, but my rules sometimes get in the way. And whether it's rules or something else that gets in the way, do I have the compassion that Jesus has? Sometimes our Christian culture, sometimes our rule making, sometimes there is a lurking, subtle prejudice where there are blind people, there are sick people, there are hurting people. There are people not like us in front of us. And we don't have the compassion. We have an awkwardness and we're just not sure. And Jesus' compassion should be our compassion. That's the first point. Second is from verses 7 through to 11. And we see here that Jesus shows mercy to the humble. So Jesus shows mercy, but he shows mercy to the humble. I was on a train to Stoke-on-Trent recently on a morning, and I'd bought a ticket in advance, so that was fine, but I didn't have a seat reservation. So I got on the train, it was very busy, and I went and found a seat which had a reservation ticket on it. But I thought, that's fine, because there's nobody on it. It's London. It's supposed to be a London to Stoke-on-Trent ticket, and there's no reservation thing in it. Sorry, there's a reservation thing in it, but there's no person in it. So I'll be fine. So I'll go and sit in that seat, because I'm supposed to have a seat. You know, it's the right class and all that sort of thing. So I sat in the seat. And of course, the whole journey, you're like thinking, maybe I'm going to be found out. Maybe I'm going to be caught out. I know one of my sons who travels on the train often, he recently had a reserve ticket, and there was someone sitting in his reserve seat, and it was a man in a suit who looked rather unwell, and there was a few little messages going backwards and forwards as to, what do you do? What's the protocol if someone's sitting in your seat, your reserve seat, and they look a bit unwell? Do you chuck them out? I think this particular son thought the guy was going to a funeral because of the suit he had, and thought he might not even make it to the funeral alive. So I think the decision in the end was not to chuck him out of his seat. But that's the kind of same humiliation, you know, when the guard comes along and boots you out of your seat and sends you down to stand with all the peasants, you know, in the bit near the toilet, where the toilet door keeps opening and closing all the time and never quite closes quick enough. Here, it's all about guests at a banquet. It's a similar story, actually, to one that's in Proverbs 25, verse 6 and 7. It's almost as though Jesus lifts it completely. And what he's trying to do here is he's trying to illustrate the arrogance of assuming your place. You see, in that culture, closeness to the host signified your social significance, social status. So basically, here's the host. The closer you were to the host, the more important you were. Be an interesting experiment at a wedding, wouldn't it, to go for the kind of easy jet approach where you have, you know, the bride and the groom, don't even give them a seat. You just say, here's a bunch of seats, sit where you like. Oh, some people probably do that and it's fine, but you just wonder what would happen. You know, the bride and groom would sit somewhere and then who would gather around and then who would feel awkward about it and what would they do? Would people pay a premium to sit near the bride and groom? That's an idea, isn't it? Make some of that money back. Perhaps they could pay a premium not to sit near the bride and groom. Jesus sees all this stuff going on. He sees how the guests want to pick the places of honor. They want to get closest to the host. And he says, don't do that. When someone invites you to a wedding feast, don't take the place of honor for a person more distinguished than you might have been invited. You might have the humiliation of being put down a rank. You sat yourself really close and you're all happy there and you're not feeling like me on the train to Stoke-on-Trent. You're actually feeling pretty comfortable with it. You're not thinking any moment someone's going to chuck me out. You're thinking I deserve to be here because I really know this person really well and I'm best of friends with them. And someone comes along, the host, and says, by the way, I don't like you quite that much and there's someone that I like a little bit better who's more important than you, and we need to swap. And of course, Jesus isn't talking about table etiquette. Yeah, there's a good general point about humility, about taking the lowest place generally in social situations, not pushing ourselves forward, not being arrogant in that sense. Of course, there's that sort of general point which we can all kind of connect with, but Jesus is making a much bigger point. You can see that, by the way, that he summarizes in verse 11 and says, for those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. It's a really important Bible principle. It's there in Proverbs 3:34. It's there in James 4 and verse 6. Really the same thing about as we humble ourselves, God exalts us. And so we see that we need humility. We need humility to trust Jesus in the first place. Jesus is addressing those of us who think we're too good to need Jesus. And you know, becoming a Christian is an immensely humbling experience. It's an intensely humbling experience because it is an admittance of our own failure. If nothing else, if we can't even see all the extent of our sin at that point, it's an admittance that we can't save ourselves, that we can't rescue ourselves, that we can't lift ourselves up, that we can't redeem ourselves. It's an admittance of our guilt. It's an admittance of our powerlessness. And so we need to humble ourselves to become a Christian. And you know, it's the height of arrogance, the height of pride, when we say, nah, I don't need God. Or if we say, God's my friend. Do you know what? I do lots of good things. And I know when I meet God one day, if he exists at all, but if he exists at all, when I meet him one day, I'm going to say to him, have you seen what I've done? And maybe I won't get the place of honor, but I'll certainly get in the banquet, won't I? Because I'm a good person. And I know people around me who are much worse than me, have done much worse things than me. And I know people internationally in the news who've done way worse things than me. And do you know what Jesus says to us? He says, you're like the person who plonks himself next to the host, thinking he deserves to be there. And part of becoming a Christian is saying, Lord, I don't deserve to be anywhere with you. I don't even deserve to be at the banquet. And yet Jesus invites us and welcomes us. Those who are humble, he will exalt. But you know too that humility is the way to go on in the Christian life, just as it is the way to become a Christian. And sometimes we become a Christian with humility and we acknowledge our sin and we put our trust in Jesus. But sometimes we just go on in the Christian life getting prouder and prouder, and sometimes prouder and prouder as we get older, because we have achieved one or two things. We have done one or two things, and some things have worked out all right in our lives, and we have managed to serve God, and we have some knowledge of the Bible, and we get prouder and prouder and prouder, and we're thinking by the end, even if we don't say it out loud, you know what? I'm going to have a pretty good seat with God. I deserve the prominent seat. And sometimes God has to come into our lives, as Christians even, and say, you need to be humble. If you want to be blessed, if you want to be lifted up, if you want to know my presence, you need to be humble. You need to keep on in the Christian life being humble, to keep down low. It's the best way to get on. Third thing from here. Jesus invites us, the unworthy, to his banquet. You see that in verses 12 through to 24. Really, this whole section has been about feasts of various kinds, but it's finished off beautifully by this story of a great banquet. All of us like a banquet, I think. All of us like a dinner party, whether we like sort of posh food, small portions, low fat, or whether we like a barbecue, large portions, high fat content, lots of salt. Whatever we like a banquet. We like a good old tuck-in meal, a slap-up with many courses. And that's what is talked about here, a great banquet that's organized. And that's the parable that Jesus told us, but just kind of on the way into that, he gives some advice to his host about offering dinner. And it's difficult to know quite where to put this, whether it kind of goes with a bit above or whether it goes with the next bit, but I think it really goes with the story. So Jesus says to his host, when you give this luncheon or dinner, this great banquet like the one you're giving now, don't give it to all your mates who are the same kind of economic status as you. Give it to the poor people. And you know, this would have been like a shocking thing for this Pharisee to hear. Because they probably would have thought most of the blind and the lame and the poor are there because God's judging them. So it would have been a shocking thing for him to say. He's not just saying, you know, be nice to poor people. He's saying something that totally cuts across the way that they would have thought. And what he says is, do that because that's what I'm like. And I'm about to show you now in this parable that I'm giving. The words he says about being blessed in the kingdom of heaven provokes this person to call out, to say, blessed is the one who will eat at the feast in the kingdom of God. See that in verse 15. And the Jews had this idea of a great banquet with the Messiah, with their promised king. So they already had that idea in their teaching, so that's probably what this guy was calling out about. This blessed is he who's going to make it to this great banquet. Of course, the weird thing is that, and the sad thing is that, although they had the theology of a great banquet with their promised king, here's the promised king in front of them, Jesus, and they didn't think he was. the promised king. But still, they call out, and that's what provokes this particular parable. So here's the story. There's a meal that's planned well in advance. See that verse 16? A certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited many guests. Really big do. Big house, big marquee, whatever he needed, he'd got it. So he prepared that. And in that culture, sometimes in our culture, you invite in advance and you get your replies in advance. And so you kind of know how many people are coming, so you organize your party around that many people coming. And it wasn't so much a specific date, but you kind of waited until it was ready. And when it was all ready, you invited people to come. Say, now it's all ready. And you couldn't kind of text them or WhatsApp them or message them in some other way, so you had to send your servant out to go all around to all your friends who you'd invited, who'd already said they were coming. And you just go and say, come on in, it's ready. And you go to the next house, you say, come on in, it's ready. It's all ready. Come on then. And as this servant goes around, it's pretty depressing because he just keeps hearing excuses. They've all, verse 18, start making excuses. One says, there's a field I've got to see. I bought this field. Don't know why I hadn't looked at it before, but anyway, he's got to see this field. Or there's a pair of oxen. I've got to test them out. I've got to do a test drive on these oxen. I can't come now. Or maybe slightly better excuse, just got married. And you see, they all could be sort of valid reasons to have said no to a banquet. But the point is that in that culture, once you had said yes, to then say no, it's a shameful thing. It's a rude thing. It's the height of rudeness to make an excuse and say, I'm not coming now. Don't fancy it anymore. And to make some excuse, however kind of reasonable the excuse might sound. And we see that the owner gets really angry about it. They began to make their excuses, and the servant comes back and reports, verse 21, and middle of 21, then the owner of the house became angry. He's angry because it's a social catastrophe, because it's rude and it's shameful. And so he sends his messenger out in his anger and says, first go to the streets and the alleyways and find the poor and the crippled and the lame and the blind, those who are considered worth nothing in society, invite them along. And the servant does that, and there's still not enough. So he says, go to the roads, go to the country lanes, compel even more people to come in to create a full house. I want my banquet to be full up with people, and I don't mind where they come from. Just get them from anywhere that you can. And the chilling thing is the way this parable ends. You see, in verse 23, the master says to his servant, go out to the roads and country lanes and compel them to come in so that my house will be full. And then we have verse 24. And do you know what happens in verse 24? The tense and the sense in the language changes. You can't quite see that in the English. But what happens in verse 24 is Jesus is not telling the story anymore. He's talking to the people right in front of him. And in verse 24 is, I tell you, not one of those who were invited will get a taste of my banquet. He changes his voice. He's telling the story. He's in the voice of the host, but he turns and he looks at those who are gathered and says, not one of you are going to taste the delights, the delicacies of my banquet. Jesus says there's a celebration. The guy who called out was right to say it will be great to be able to celebrate the banquet, as it's called, the idea of celebrating in the presence of God. It will be great to be there and to enjoy that. But Jesus says to those who are right in front of him, particularly the Pharisees who are judging him and so on, he says, you won't even enjoy a taste of it because you're like the people who are invited first in the story. The people who are invited first who say we are going to come. We were going to come, but now we've decided we're not going to come. And particularly the Jews he's talking to are like that. They're people who said they were going to come or seemed like they were going to come, but they weren't going to come because now the invitation comes out. Now the servant has arrived. Now Jesus has arrived. And he says, come, it's all ready. The kingdom of God is at hand. It's happening right now. And they say, nah, I don't want to bother. They start to make their excuses. And of course, their excuses are much worse than these even. It's shameful. It's rude. And of course, God, the judge, is angry about that. And he says, okay, well, I'll invite everybody else. And they'll come and you won't taste any of it. So two things to see just as we close. First of all, there is an invitation to receive. We're not Jews, we're not bound up with those kind of issues, but perhaps this morning you need to hear that there's an invitation for you. And it's actually an invitation for you, for you personally, to come to this banquet, to be invited, to join in with the celebration, to enjoy God forever. And it's an invitation, in a sense, for those who realize that they're poor, that they're crippled, that they're lame, that they're blind, a bit like I was saying about the man who needed healing. It's an invitation for those who stand in front of Jesus with all their issues, with all their problems, and say, have mercy on me. But I think you need to realize that Jesus is not inviting you to shame you. He's inviting you to bless you. The invitation from Jesus is an invitation to a banquet. Think of the best possible event you could go to, with the best food, with the best entertainment, with the best company you could imagine. Just think of that for a second and think, that is what Jesus is inviting you to. It's not just a kind of a charity handout that Jesus is offering you, some kind of, you know, small, meager supplies that might just get you through a few more days. It's not just kind of soup and a roll or something like that. It's a banquet with the King of Kings, the best host, the best food, the best company, calling you to enjoy life with him, to give you the life that you never expected, the life that you never deserved. And the sad thing for some of us this morning is that we're still like the first set of guests who are making our excuses. And it could be all kinds of things that stop us coming to Jesus and saying, yeah, I want that invitation and I want to come and join him with that. There can be all kinds of reasons. There can be kind of intellectual barriers we put up. It could be to do with our possessions, like the man with the field. The things that we own, they engross us, they engage us. We want to get involved in them. Or it could be to do with our work, like the man who wants to try out his oxen. We get involved with that and all our work and all the intrigue of that and all the interest of that and all the fulfillment that gives us. And that's our thing. Or maybe it's our family, like the man who marries a wife and says, no, I can't come to the banquet because I'm married now. And we can be like that. And we put all these things as excuses in the way. I can't do it, or I can't do it now. I've got to do this thing now in my life. And once I'm sorted and I've got a little bit of time and I can kind of kick back and maybe I'll look into Christianity, maybe I'll investigate it in my retirement. That'll be a good time to do it. Not quite sure what I'm going to do in my retirement, so perhaps I'll look at Christianity then. It's all about these people making excuses. And do you know what Jesus says? If you really, really push me away enough, you won't taste it. But if you're really humble enough, you can come. You can really come. So the invitation this morning is, do you want to come? Do you want to come to this banquet? Do you want to join in with this feast? Don't let anything stop you. Just think about it for a moment. What is stopping you? And Jesus says, don't let anything stop you. Because this is the great celebration. So there's an invitation to receive, but of course, in this parable, there's an invitation to give. In a way, Jesus is the great servant who's going out making the invitation, saying, come now, it's already. But it's also an invitation he gives to us to give, to hand out, to give out. And it's just another one of those really powerful moments in Luke's gospel where we get to feel this. We need to reach out to those who are poor, to those who are blind, to those who are crippled spiritually, to those who are needy, to those who are not like us, to those who don't have organized lives or orderly lives or who aren't doing everything right, and to people who, in a way, are Paulless with their behavior, to people who are not at all living to please God, to people who are seemingly unworthy of God's love. We need to reach out with the gospel to them. Do you know why? Because Jesus does. Jesus is like the host here, ignoring the arrogant and proud who don't want to come, but calling those who are seemingly unworthy and seemingly don't deserve to be invited to the banquet. He's making an invitation to them. And we as his messengers need to do exactly the same thing to the seemingly unworthy and the unwashed, people written off by us, people who make us uncomfortable. And Jesus says, you need to be like me, going everywhere, compelling them to come in. Now, Jesus is not saying what you really need to do is to get some forceful blokes to go out in the streets and compel them. Come on, be a Christian. You know, that we've got the street evangelism guy coming in July, actually, now. But it was going to be in June, but he's coming in July. And he's not going to give us some training about how best two people can wrestle someone in Haywards Heath High Street and compel them to come along to the church. That's not what he means. But by using that idea of compel, it's that sense of urgency. Like you use everything you got. What have you got? Whoever you are, whatever you can say, whatever you can do, you say, I'm going to use everything I've got to try and compel people to come and become Christians. And it's really hard work, and it seems sometimes such an uphill struggle, and it seems so discouraging at times, but I'm going to keep trying to compel them to come in, to try and use everything in my power to persuade them to come in. And do you know why we do that? We do that for two really important reasons. One is because Jesus has that compassion. Do you want to be like Jesus? Have compassion for the lost. Do you want to be like Jesus? Care deeply for the lost. Do you want to be like Jesus? Reach down to anybody and everybody with the gospel. But do you know why also? The second reason is this. It's brilliant what you're inviting people to, isn't it? It's brilliant what you're inviting people to. Sometimes I don't feel it. This parable helps me feel it. Because sometimes I think my banquets are all right, and I'm quite enjoying them right now as a Christian. I'm enjoying my life. I'm enjoying my family. I'm enjoying my car. I'm enjoying my job. I'm enjoying all the stuff in my life. And that's my banquet. And sometimes we forget there's the banquet over here. And that's the best thing to invite people to. And we never need to apologize for inviting people to the cross. We don't say, oh, sorry, I'm a Christian, I can't do that. We say, I'm going to the banquet. And do you want to come to the banquet with me? Because it's really exciting. It's really brilliant. It's the best event that will ever happen. And that's what we've got to do. And I know it's easy to kind of enthuse about it standing here, and I know it's really hard when we're right in front of our family and we're in front of our friends and we're at our work and it's an awkward conversation. We don't know quite how to get out of it in a way that honors God. But you've got to feel it. You've got to feel it first. You know, it's going to be hard, and we're going to need God's help every day, but you've got to feel it. Are you feeling it this morning? That it's a banquet, that it's an invitation to the best event. And I've said that about five times, but it is the best event, isn't it? Isn't it? Well, what's the point? Go to Brighton. Soak up the sun for the rest of the day, because it's pointless unless this is the event. You know, if a barbecue on the beach is the event that's going to shape your life, if your wedding or your other kind of party or your achievement at work or your possessions that you're in, if that's the party you want, go and enjoy them, says Jesus. But you know what? You won't taste a morsel of the banquet. But if you humble yourself, you will. And so that's what we want to do. We want to come to Jesus. We want to humble ourselves. We want to put our faith in him. And as Jesus' servants, we want to invite people to do the same. Be excited. Remember, we're inviting sick people to be made well, humble people to be exalted, poor people like we were to the greatest banquet ever.